Hello and welcome to Baylor Connections, a conversation series with the people shaping our future. Each week we go in depth with Baylor leaders, professors, and more, discussing important topics in higher education, research, and student life. I'm Derek Smith, and our guest today is Dr. Kevin Dougherty, Associate Professor of Sociology at Baylor. Kevin is a leading teacher and researcher whose work has shed light on topics like religious affiliation, religious participation, racial diversity in religious organizations, congregational growth and decline, the impact of religious involvement on other aspects of social life, and much more. We're just scratching the surface there. His findings have been featured nationally on NPR, CNN, USA Today, The Chronicle of Higher Education, and more. Dr. Dougherty serves as Executive Director of the Religious Research Association and is a resident scholar in Baylor's Institute for the Studies of Religion, and he's with us today on Baylor Connections. Welcome to the program. It's so great to have you here today.
Pleasure to be with you.
Well, let's dive right in. As we talked a lot about some of the topics you've researched, I mean, you have multiple projects on many of those topics. So obviously, religious research, religious life at the top of what you do, but I'm curious how a specific topic captures your imagination. With such an unlimited number of directions you could go, how do topics break through for you to say, this is what I want to focus on?
Yes. So broadly, I'm interested in the role and relevance of religious faith in contemporary social life. And my particular focus within that is religious congregations. So where people go to learn and practice their faith. And related to religious congregations, I'm interested in all sorts of topics, you know, how they form, how they grow, rates of participation over time, when congregations close, why they close. So anything related to congregations, I probably have some peripheral interest in. In terms of what I write about for publication, it's identifying areas in existing research where there's a gap in knowledge that I can fill. And so you become part of what you do as a student in graduate school is you master a literature and learn where the gaps are in existing studies, and then you work the rest of your career to fill those gaps. Mm-hmm. And I've been at a place at Baylor University that has given me access to all sorts of data to allow me to answer interesting questions about the role and relevance of faith in contemporary mm-hmm. life.
What is it about congregations and congregational life that so intrigues you?
I'm fascinated by the way that groups form us and sometimes deform us. And so, you know, we don't practice faith by ourselves. We might practice private prayer, but where we learn faith, for most people, you know, it starts early on in a Sunday school program or some type of religious education class that our parents sent us to, and then we're involved in a youth group and maybe eventually a college group, and then we decide whether or not we want to participate in faith on our own. And this repeated exposure to other people of faith, it has a powerful effect on how we think about faith ourselves and how we practice our faith. And so the people that we gather with, for those that attend religious services, those people become an important reference point for us in all sorts of ways in terms of not only faith, but how we work, how we vote, whether or not we volunteer, what we think about social issues of our day. And I am fascinated by all of those interactions that happen in and through congregations.
Mm-hmm. Well, Kevin, maybe this is a too broad of a question to answer simply, but we hear a lot about people's involvement in religious organizations, in church attendance, things like that. Could you give us a little state of congregational life in 2019?
Absolutely. Happy to do so. So there's a big misconception in perpetuated recently by some headlines that Americans are rapidly becoming irreligious. Now, there are some signs that would make religious people and religious leaders nervous. Church membership, in particular, is dropping. But that doesn't mean that people aren't still connected in some way to a congregation. It's that they're no longer signing formal membership rosters in those congregations. And part of this is driven by the fact that non-denominational congregations and exceptionally large congregations are no longer asking people to be members in ways that Methodist and Presbyterian churches of 100 people used to do, a generation or two ago. And so denominationalism is becoming less important to people. They're more interested in finding a group of people that helps them develop in their faith, and whether or not they pledge membership to that, many Americans are still actively involved in a faith community and identify with a faith community. So one example of this is that we have tracked over the course of the last 15 years people's attachment to a congregation. And if you ask them what their denomination is, an increasing percentage of people won't be able to give you an answer. Those same people, when asked, can you give us the name and address of where you worship, can. And so although almost half of people now no longer provide us in these surveys the name of a denomination, over 60% still can give us the name and location of their place of worship. Even if they don't attend regularly, they're identifying with a place of worship. And although church membership is dropping, one of the things that is remaining more constant are levels of attendance in our society. And particularly for some groups, attendance continues to be quite high. So, yes, there are more people that don't claim membership in a church, and there are more people that describe themselves as not religious, but that doesn't mean that Americans are giving up on faith altogether. We remain one of the most religiously vital, high-income nations in the world today.
Talking to Dr. Kevin Dougherty, Associate Professor of Sociology and Religious Researcher here at Baylor. Let's talk about dive into that a little bit. One of your more recent studies that we saw late last summer, early last fall, look at multiracial congregations. Broadly, what are the questions you were seeking to answer with that?
Well, we're really interested in, and this is a part of a whole series of studies for me over the course of the last 20 years, on how has the racial composition of American congregations changed in the 21st century? And then what are the characteristics, and have these characteristics changed, of multiracial congregations in particular?
So what are some of the questions you asked? What are some of the things you found?
Yeah, so we're using national survey data on U.S. congregations. So it includes the full cross-section of different faith groups in the United States, Christian and non-Christian. So a very good snapshot of where people worship. And the same survey has been repeated three times now. It's in its fourth iteration. And we were using data from 1998, 2006, and 2012, and comparing across that time frame. Who's attending congregations, what's the race and ethnicity of those individuals, and then in particular, those congregations that show some level of racial and ethnic diversity, what do they look like on the inside? And so some of the interesting findings to come out of this, between 1998 and 2012, a big change is the percentage of blacks in the pews and pulpits of multiracial congregations. In 1998, the two groups most likely to worship together in these religiously mixed settings were whites and Latinos. In 2012, it was whites and blacks. More than a quarter of multiracial congregations' participants are now African American or black. Wow. And in the pulpits, it's been a four-time increase in the number of black clergy leading multiracial congregations. In 1998, only 4% of multiracial churches were led by black clergy. In 2012, that was up to 16%. And so we're seeing this dramatic change in terms of who is worshiping together in these congregations.
Do you get a sense of why that is in your studies?
Well, there's a number of competing explanations. And because we're using congregational data, so we have information about congregations, we don't have information in these surveys from individuals.
Sure.
In the seats or the pews. So we can't ask them, why are you here? Why are you not somewhere else? But we do have some speculation. So part of what's driving, we think, the increase in black-white worship is an intentional effort to reach across the biggest cultural divide in our society, and that is the divide between white and black. And so if you ask white Americans in terms of how do you feel about other racial and ethnic groups, the group continually, In for decades of survey research now, that you find that there's the biggest cultural gap is between whites and how they feel about blacks. And so there's been intentional effort by religious leaders to try to bridge that gap, and working with white and black clergy working together, and efforts being made. The other factor at work here is the rise of Latino Protestant churches. This is a distinct type of congregation that didn't exist in the same way 30 to 40 years ago, not to the extent that it does now. So, you know, the perception is that most Latinos, particularly those coming from Mexico, which is the largest feeder of into our country of Latinos, are Catholic. Well, an increasing number of those, once they arrive in the United States, leave the Catholic Church, if not formally, informally, to attend Protestant churches. Protestant churches are more racially and ethnically segregated than our Catholic parishes. And so when Latinos leave Catholic parishes for Latino-dominant Protestant churches, they're leaving racially mixed settings for more ethnically homogenous settings. Mm-hmm. And so for Latinos, the decreasing percentage of Latinos in multiracial churches, we think, might have something to do with the rising number of Latino Protestant churches operating in our society today.
Visiting with Dr. Kevin Doherty. And Kevin, you mentioned the increase in multiracial congregations. What constitutes a multiracial congregation in your study?
Great question. So there's a threshold that we use. A multiracial congregation is, we classify as a congregation in which no single racial or ethnic group makes up more than 80% of participants. Now, the reason why that 80% number is important is that in a congregation that has 90% the same race, the members of that statistical majority group may never interact with other races and ethnicities. But when a secondary group, but when the largest group is 80% or less, the likelihood of interaction across racial and ethnic lines becomes quite high in these congregations. So no longer are members of the non-dominant statistical majority in terms of race or ethnicity merely tokens that people can ignore. They're much more active and engaged in the congregation with members of the statistical majority group. And so for that reason, we use that 80-20 threshold as the marker of what defines a multiracial congregation.
How do these multiracial congregations compare demographically to the neighborhoods in which they're in?
Well, it's not the condition is not that neighborhoods become diverse and congregations immediately follow. To the contrary, today, well, as of 2012, when the last year of the survey data that we'd had, congregations were still four times less diverse than their neighborhoods. Now, that's down. In 1998, they were eight times less diverse than their neighborhoods. So this interesting relationship that we see, yes, it does take diversity around a congregation for a congregation to have the potential to change racially and ethnically inside its doors, but that's no guarantee that it will. And so simply being in a diverse neighborhood does not mean that a congregation will, through osmosis, all of a sudden over time become diverse. It really takes an intentional effort of religious leaders and parishioners to become a place that is open to others that don't look like them. Simply residing in a neighborhood, when the neighborhood changes, if the congregation doesn't take efforts, that poses a very difficult challenge for the survivability of that congregation without some intentional effort.
This is Baylor Connections. We are visiting with Dr. Kevin Doherty, Associate Professor of Sociology at Baylor and a leading teacher and researcher in religion and its impact on life in America today. And Kevin, what impact do multiracial congregations, you talk about a lot of that purposeful outreach, and you talk about if there's 20%, there's much more of a likelihood that people of different races will interact, maybe talk about key issues, develop relationships.
Right.
What impact have you seen on that?
Yeah, so we have mixed results here. In principle, we know that in settings where people of different racial and ethnic backgrounds have the opportunity to come together on relatively equal terms and enter into cooperative interactions, great results are produced. Stereotypes are minimized, prejudice decreases, because as you get to know someone that's not like you, you start to rethink how you think about everybody that looks like them. So for that reason, 20 years ago, there was a lot of hope among religious leaders and even some sociologists like me that the future for race relations will be very positive if we simply have more multiracial congregations. What we find in these congregations, though, is that many of them operate as diverse but not integrated. Now, let me unpack that distinction. Diversity is the presence of multiple racial and ethnic groups. Integration is when not only do you have presence, but you have relationships, shared power, equal engagement across all of these groups. And our ideal in society is racial integration, not just diversity. And that's true for religious leaders as well. But what we're seeing in these congregations is simply attracting members that come from different racial and ethnic backgrounds don't automatically mean that the sons and daughters of these families are being encouraged to get married or date, or that the interactions across these individuals are naturally occurring and that they form friendships. And so while the potential is there, we continue to see inside multiracial congregations that work has to be done to go beyond a place that is simply characterized by differences in members' backgrounds to being a place where these differences are bridged by friendships and long-term meaningful relationships. And that's where the real progress of racial reconciliation happens, is in relationship.
Is the why and the how on that another study to be done?
Always more studies to be done, for sure, yes. Mm-hmm. But those are the types of questions that we are working on now, is what is the impact on individuals of being in these types of congregations? How do you feel about things like immigration and a border wall and the threat of employment, loss of employment because you're not in a privileged group in society? These are important questions, not only for religious Americans, but for all Americans. And if congregations can be a part of solving those types of longstanding tensions, it should be something that we advocate for and celebrate.
Absolutely. Visiting with Dr. Kevin Doherty today on Baylor Connections, and we talked about you've done so many projects related to religious life in America, both on your own and with colleagues in Baylor ISR. For this study, did you draw on any of your past studies, and how much interplay is there between past work you've done on future work you're doing, your current or future work?
Well, this is the topic of race and religion is a long-standing interest for me. And so I've published over, about a dozen studies on this particular topic, looking at all different aspects of how do multiracial congregations form, how do they function, and now getting into the issue of what's the impact of these congregations on the individuals that are involved. All of these things are connected. The work that I do today, I can't forget what I wrote yesterday or a year back. And in fact, every study sort of introduces new questions for me. So, an understanding in this most recent publication on the changing complexion of American congregations, we find the rising number of blacks and whites worshiping together and the rising number of blacks in the pulpit. So then a whole set of questions comes out of that. Well, what are these congregations like that have black senior pastors, multiracial congregations with black senior pastors? And where are the Latinos going that used to be in multiracial churches and no longer seem to be? And what about the rise of Latino Protestant congregations? And what does that mean for Latino spirituality, but also for ethnic relations in society with the increasing number of Latinos in the United States? So all of these studies go to reinforce one another and continue me down a path of endlessly fascinating inquiry into religion and race and ethnicity in the United States.
That's a big part, obviously, of what you do. But in conjunction with your colleagues, you've done that a lot in the Baylor Institute for the Studies of Religion with the longstanding Baylor Religion Survey. Shifting topics a little bit, I know that's something we see every few years, a new wave of data. What is that Baylor Religion Survey that you're a part of, and how does it play into the rest of what we're talking about?
The Baylor Religion Survey is a really ambitious effort to understand the beliefs and values of the American population and how those are constant or change over time. So we collected the first wave of data from the Baylor Religion Survey in the early 2000s. 2005 was the first wave. And then about every 3 years since then, we've repeated that. Approximately 60% of the content on those surveys stays the same. And we ask questions about religious affiliation, religious identity, religious belief, religious practice. And then about 40% of this content rotates with every new wave of the survey. Every time it's administered, we ask sort of hot-button social issues. And so in 2017, we asked questions about mental health and technology and responses to the Trump presidency. And in every wave of the Baylor Religion Survey, we have about 40% of that type of topical content. And the survey is administered by the Gallup organization to a national random sample of American adults. It's administered in English and in Spanish. And it really is the most comprehensive effort of data collection on religion and spirituality being done today in the United States.
That the Baylor Religion Survey, what aspects of its impact have meant most to you and your colleagues?
Well, people are the Baylor Religion Survey provides an incredible opportunity for all sorts of researchers interested in religion and spirituality to answer their research questions, and that's one of the by design one of the purposes of the survey is to make it accessible to carefully consider what's happening in the religious lives of Americans today, and then how religion impacts other aspects of thinking and acting in society. I think we've seen all sorts of intriguing findings emerge from the Baylor Religion Survey. In the first wave, one of the things that we discovered that there are four dominant views of God that Americans have. And depending on the way that you conceive of God as sort of as a harsh judge or as a benevolent father or as a distant critic, that has all sorts of implications for other areas of life, including how you think about differences around you and politics and your engagement in those things. Who's responsible for making society better? Is it God, the personal act of God, or is it us because God's a distant celestial being? So the four images of God, the work on religion and technology that we're doing now, do we need to fear that the internet will push God out of society? The answer to that is no. People use the internet to search God, search for God, and understand how faith works. So these types of looking at ways that religion relates to other things is really a valuable contribution of the Baylor Religion Survey to our understanding of the place of religion in society and the way that it's changing.
Kevin Doherty, thanks so much. There's a lot more I'd love to ask you, but maybe we'll get a visit with you and your colleagues again on some of these topics.
Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Kevin Doherty, our guest today on Baylor Connections. I'm Derek Smith. A reminder that you can hear this and other programs online, baylor.edu/connections, or you can subscribe on iTunes. Thanks for joining us on Baylor Connections.